Everyone to What the Fiction. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host, and with me for an exciting conversation about the show, Cobra Kai, is Katie Horn.
Yes, I'm here. I'm so excited.
You may know her as the internet's number one Darth Maul / Maul fan.
Oh, did I win that title? Am I number one? I didn't win the title. I took the title. I karate kicked everybody to the face. And now I'm the number one Maul stan. Yes.
I think it's general knowledge that you are the number one Maul stan on the internet.
Good.
And if there is any doubts, Katie Horn will meet you at the All Valley Karate Tournament.
Yes.
This year. And we will see it play out on the mat.
Well, what's that movie where somebody asked The Rock, like, how he got so jacked? And he's like, oh, I just worked out 6 hours every day for the last 20 years. Anybody could do it. That's how I am with like Maul trivia. It's like, well, I just read Darth Maul comics 6 hours every day for the last 20 years. Anyone can do it.
Exactly. We're not here to talk about Star Wars. Star Wars is unfortunately such a huge part of our lives still, that it will inevitably touch on Star Wars as an analog for things. They talk about things in very similar ways between Cobra Kai and Star Wars. So we apologize in advance for all of the references I'm sure we're going to be making to Star Wars, but it does work as a good analog because people are more familiar with Star Wars than necessarily Zen Buddhism, where a lot of Cobra Kai is pulled from.
Right. Cobra Kai wants to be compared to Star Wars, honestly.
It does. And they make Star Wars references. So, yeah.
And they play with a lot of the same themes that we're more familiar with from Star Wars. And I don't think we should necessarily apologize for that. MC, rescind that apology. Take it back.
Okay, fine. I take it back. I bring my gift receipt from the holidays because it is. And I would like to get my money back. Apologizing for Star Wars.
We make no apologies.
I'm Canadian. I have to like say like four sorries.
That's true. So.
Let's start out. Okay, why Cobra Kai? I didn't want to watch this show. I'm gonna admit.
Yeah.
No, like I didn't. My husband Kyle had watched the show, and the first season was like, "This is brilliant," and I'm like, "Yeah, it's not my thing." And then the third season came out and I'm like, you know what? People keep on saying, Katie keeps on tweeting about it.
Katie keeps tweeting you about it. Mary Claire.
Everybody's like, hey, watch this show. And I'm like, okay, I'll give the first season a try. And I did try the first episode, which is hard.
Yeah.
And it took me like a week of like trying to get through the first episode, which is bananas, that like like it's hard, like it's so hard, it's visually and like psychologically hard to get through the first episode.
Right.
But once you get through it, you're like, oh, I get it. Okay, I get it. Yeah. I'm a huge How I Met Your Mother fan, so I kind of already knew a little tiny bit about like why this story was being made. But it absolutely needed to be made. And we're going to go into a lot of that in this conversation about Cobra Kai in the lead up to season 4.
Season 4 coming, gosh, just like
soon.
2 weeks from this recording. Yeah, very soon.
Next week, probably by the time this comes out. Yes.
Well, yeah. Oh, I wanted to say that, yes, that first episode of Cobra Kai is rough. And I'm kind of lucky because my husband just sat down to watch it. I don't even think he asked me if I wanted to watch it. He was just watching it. And then I didn't come in until like episode 3, I think. And I was just like, oh, what you watching? And I sat down on the couch and watched it with them. I got to skip that whole first episode and got like really invested. And so I didn't watch those first, you know, couple of episodes until later. And I was already super invested. So I actually feel kind of really lucky about that because I think if that first episode had, you know, if I had gone in fresh with that, I would have been like, no, too sad. I'm out. Bye.
This story, although, you know, hey, we had the Karate Kid movies in the 80s and 90s. We had, you know, the The young upstart of Daniel LaRusso, you know, and it really, really focused on him as the main character, the hero of the story, his own journeys, all of the lessons that he needed to learn. And then eventually with the next Karate Kid, we got Julie, who is
Hilary Swank.
Yes, Hilary Swank. But Katie and I are like obsessed with her hopefully coming back into Cobra Kai because of what she meant to both of us when that movie came out. And
I
get into that too.
I watched The Next Karate Kid way more than I ever watched the first three films when I was a kid. I feel like it was on TV a lot.
Yeah.
There's a theme
that plays when the bird flies a lot or when she's like had a moment of realization. It's still stuck in my head to this day. It's like a fluty sound, like theme music. And it's still stuck there. I don't know. The music for that movie was way better than some of the plot choices, but
there was always just something about it that tickled my brain where it wasn't just like, I mean, obviously it's like, okay, so the Karate Kid's a girl this time, obviously I'm going to be into that, but something about like, oh, we're going to teach you how to dance, but it's going to be karate steps, you know, to teach her how to dance. That, I don't know, that tickled my brain where it was all like, oh, she's really good at karate, but she doesn't know how to dance. She doesn't want to wear a pretty dress. Well, she does want to wear a pretty dress, but she's afraid she'll, you know, won't look nice or she'll, you know, be awkward at the school dance. So, but then like the karate gives her the confidence to go just have a nice time at the school dance.
And that's she doesn't have friends. And so she develops friendships with monks, which is fine. Like they're accepting and loving, and friendship comes from weird places. That was also one of the themes of that movie. But like the Karate Kid movies themselves, like it was really my brother's thing. It wasn't my thing, you know, like I watched them and like, I don't know how much I actually watched of Karate Kid 3. Now that I like look back on it, I'm like, oh, what was that movie? I don't remember. What was that movie? When you like, I do want to encourage people, if you haven't seen Cobra Kai, you don't need to watch any of the Karate Kid movies to like walk into it. They do a really good job of like telling you what's important to pay attention to that they're pulling from the past.
Right.
And it just like these movies, now that I've rewatched them through the Cobra Kai lens, I 100% think that Daniel LaRusso is the villain of the story. of at least Karate Kid, right?
And right.
That all comes down to this whole like thing that was played off as a joke with Barney Stinson in, you know, How I Met Your Mother. He had this obsession with the Karate Kid movies. All of his friends were like, okay, that's cool. But he wasn't obsessed with the Karate Kid. He was obsessed with Billy Zabka's playing of Johnny Lawrence. And he's like, it's the story of a hopeful young karate enthusiast whose dream and moxie takes him all the way to the All Valley Championship, Karate Championship. Of course, sadly, he loses in the final round to a nerd. And then learns the importance of gracefully accepting defeat, which genuinely happens in the movie.
It exactly happens. Yeah, if you watch the movie, you know what I mean? At the beginning of the movie, Ralph Macchio's character, Daniel LaRusso, comes to town where Johnny Lawrence already lives. And at the very beginning, Johnny is hanging out with his friends and they call him like an ace degenerate. And he goes, hey, I'm an ex degenerate. Senior year, I'm turning everything around. We're like, whoa, here's this guy that's gonna, you know, he's picking himself up. He's like, I'm a senior now. I'm gonna get serious. Like, no more effing around. And then Daniel LaRusso just comes in and wrecks his whole life.
He's like, you know, that girl that you've been like, you know, on a break with, like in the Rachel and Ross friends kind of way. I'm going to steal her. I'm going to piss you off at the Halloween dance. I'm going to like constantly be poking at you. And I'm going to kick you in the face with an illegal move.
It's all about point of view. It's all about point of view. And when Cobra Kai as a series is so smart because it comes in, it says, well, yeah, if you look at this movie from Johnny's point of view, it's a whole different story. And it really opens it up and lets us dig into that and tell a new story for a new generation And I'm so here for it.
Yeah. And that's the why of why this is important, because it does a couple of things. Not only does it allow us to actually take the generational trauma and issues from the previous generation and explore them through the lens of a newer generation who sees those problems and says, hey, maybe you should have handled that differently back then.
Yeah.
but it also allows the characters to kind of see each other's things from each other's perspectives eventually, because they're going through the lens of the past, right? They're looking at things with sort of this, afterthought, and like, mm-hmm. what could have been, what went wrong, you know? And then because generational trauma is such an interesting thing, it's explored through multiple generations of karate enthusiasts in the valley. And mm-hmm. it absolutely all culminates in the idea that there is no right or wrong. There is only a good way of teaching, maybe, or a teacher that teaches you in a way that allows you to have opportunities, or a teacher that doesn't allow you to have opportunities.
Yeah. It's what what will bring out your best self. Yeah. And there's no one way to do
that. There's no one way to do that.
If there was one way to bring out everybody's best self, we would have figured that out already and, you know, marketed it. Like, everybody would do it. Right. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And just because something is aggressive, mm-hmm. right, or on the attack,
right,
doesn't necessarily make it wrong. And exactly, just because something is on the defensive, mm-hmm. it also doesn't necessarily mean it's weak. It's right. So good.
Right, right. So at the beginning of the Cobra Kai series, Johnny Lawrence is down on his luck. His life is just absolutely in the toilet. And he thinks, maybe the way for me to get out of this is to reconnect with my karate and become a karate teacher. You know, it'll earn him some money. And, you know, and it's a thing
something
he's really
good at.
It's something he's really good at. And in direct response to that, when Daniel LaRusso sees that Cobra Kai has reopened, it inspires him or drives him to go ahead and open up his own karate dojo. He's also become sort of disconnected from his karate. I think we see that his old dojo is filled with like pool equipment at that time, you know, like floaties and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
There, you know, he's just using that dojo as storage space. And, you know, when Cobra Kai reopens, he's like, actually, I kind of need my karate. And so they both get different students with different needs. And it's so interesting because a kid like Robbie, who just so happens to be Johnny Lawrence's son, is a fairly like angry kid with, you know, a lot of problems. His home life just isn't great. He's living with his mother, not with Johnny. And, you know, they don't always pay rent on time. They don't always have electricity or food in the fridge. So he's a kid with like a lot of problems. And so going to Cobra Kai and punching out those problems and, you know, finding someone to fixate on and just beat the crap out of them wouldn't necessarily work for Robbie, but instead he goes to Miyagi-Do and Daniel teaches him like, peace, you know, let's find peace. Let's find some balance. And we're like, wow, yeah, that's the right thing for that kid. But not every kid is Robbie. There's some kids that need, you know, a bit of an ass kicking, you know, they need more confidence. They need what Johnny is peddling, and what Johnny is peddling is don't give up. Defeat does not exist in this dojo. You're cool. You're a cool person, actually, you know, just get up off the floor. And we see so many kids that need to hear that. My favorite character is Hawk. I love the character of Hawk because I think he's the exact right student for Johnny Lawrence, besides Miguel, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do want to point out like Miguel and Johnny, Miguel, Daniel, and Robbie.
Okay. Yeah.
Are like the versions of the next generational versions of Johnny and Daniel.
Right.
And they both come from single mother, but cared for, or differently cared for situations. So Robbie has a single mom. Miguel has a single mom. We find out that Johnny actually had a single mom, but then got married and the situation wasn't great. Stepdad situation.
Right, right.
And, but like still, you know, heavily relied on single mom, but the stepdad was never really a dad to him. It was just more like a, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain that relationship. Yeah. They do a really good job of it.
Yeah.
And then Danny was also single mommed. There's something in this whole thing talking about like, you know, how we as a society sort of don't allow our men to have like that experience of, I don't know what it is, like the being brought into the hunters group. Right. And in so many ways, this karate concept is doing that for this generation of men. And in both state, like both of them are being brought into becoming a man, quote unquote. And I'm not saying that like that's like this thing, but we don't do a good job, even though traditionally many cultures had some sort of ritual to say, now you are a man.
Right, right.
There's tons of rituals for women out there. Now you are a woman.
Yeah. Right?
Our body reminds us of that. But in this karate, is that for these characters?
Right.
Who don't have strong male figures in their lives.
Yeah, because Cobra Kai, well, the Karate Kid universe, the Miyagi-verse.
Yeah.
It draws a direct parallel between being a sensei and being a father. They're pretty much the same thing in this universe. And then they make that kind of literal when they're like, well, these students don't have literal fathers at home taking care of them. So when they're looking for what kind of man am I going to be? How do I be a man? Their role model is their sensei. And so then they model themselves after, you know, and their father being their sensei, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's an important thing that's being said in the story, but I don't know that necessarily it was intentional. Like,
oh, you think?
I don't know.
I think it fulfills a need in the plot, I think.
Yeah.
Because really early on, like first or second episode, Johnny asked Miguel, well, what does your dad think about you getting your ass kicked all the time? Right. And Miguel says, well, don't have one. And I think, because if these kids had dads, then you would have to bump up against that father all the time. Johnny would always have to interact with Miguel's father.
Deal with the dad. Yeah.
You know,
I think it was I think it was a purposeful choice, but I think that it was maybe not done maybe with the intention. Well, I don't know. Because we didn't know Johnny Lawrence's backstory until they decided to tell us in Cobra Kai.
Right.
So,
right.
And they made him they purposefully made him have a stepdad that didn't care about him.
Right.
So that was a choice, of course, but exactly, I don't know if they were trying to do it in a way that says like, this is you bringing these kids into adulthood. And like, in a way, like this is showing them how to be men. And that ends up being a through line of the show, like dating advice, or I'm having problems with this girl, or I need to do this thing and I don't know how to do it. And it ends up being more than just karate. That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I think, you know, making a point to say that Johnny is essentially fatherless, it allows Kreese to fill that vacuum and draw a direct parallel in that way. Particularly between like Daniel and Mr. Miyagi. Daniel also, you know, didn't have a father growing up. We learn in like the Karate Kid 2 that his father died.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Miyagi is filling that fatherhood role. And so when we allow Johnny to have that with Kreese, it draws that very firm parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, it's another thing that they laid the groundwork of, or that they showed that these two are actually the same.
Yes. Just
different perspectives.
Exactly. Yeah. And
this leans into one of the first things we wanted to talk about, which
Katie,
do you want to talk about this first? You want to introduce it?
Yes. I firmly believe that Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence are a dyad in the Force. Yes, they are two that are one. They are, you know, the darkness rises and light to meet it. They are each other's equal.
The Tao, right?
The Tao.
The yin-yang symbol that we are very familiar mm-hmm. with. One yeah. is light with a little bit of darkness, and one is dark with a little bit of light, right?
Right.
And they're constantly circling each other.
Constantly.
Exactly. In movement. And, throughout the plot of the show, you start to see that really clearly represented.
Exactly. Well, there's this, you know, philosophy in the Tao where when the sun reaches its lowest point, it will start to rise. And when it reaches its highest point, it'll start to fall. Mm-hmm. And then that's very much Johnny and Daniel, where at the very beginning, that first episode that's so hard to watch, Johnny is so low, you know, he's at his lowest point. So then we start to see him rise up. And then on the other side of that coin, we see Daniel is living the high life. Everything's great for Daniel. Everything is coming up Daniel. Yeah, everything's coming up Daniel. Like, yeah, he's affluent. He has a thriving business. You know,
he's got a beautiful wife and children. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's got it all. And then he sees Cobra Kai's reopening and, you know, there's nowhere for him to go except down. They're circling each other, whether they realize it or not. And, I want to bring up when in that first episode, Johnny is watching a movie called Iron Eagle.
Yeah.
He's watching it on TV. And then there's this line about like, you know what you need to get back on top. You know what you need. And then it smash cuts to a commercial with Daniel LaRusso being like, hey, I'm Daniel LaRusso. Come down to my dealership. It's like, that's what you need, Johnny. You need Daniel. The universe was telling him he needs Daniel.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. Yeah.
And they framed it very much like not only is sort of, our good friend, Johnny Lawrence, who I love, like after watching Cobra Kai, I'm just obsessed with the character of Johnny Lawrence. He's just so, like, he's so wonderful. He has his problems. He drinks too much. He has no concept of technology at all. literally doesn't. And it's endearing in a way, how kind of broken he is. Mm-hmm. You're like, I understand this brokenness. This human has hit so far in the bottom. He doesn't even know how to really actually behave in society.
Yeah.
He lives by this weird set of rules that were brokenly given to him as a teenager. And he's never left that point in his life. Yeah, and in some ways, Daniel grew up, but he also didn't leave that point in his life.
Right.
Because there was no healing for either of them.
Yeah. They're both very stuck in that moment in 1983, 84, something like that. They're stuck in that tournament where one of them won and one of them lost. They haven't moved on where, you know, Daniel uses that karate kick, the footage of him kicking Johnny in the face. He uses it as promotion for his dealership where,
it's like those, it's like those kids that like they peaked in high school.
Yes.
And not to say that Daniel didn't do things like he did. He went into, but everything that Daniel is all given to him by Mr. Miyagi.
Right.
He is nothing that is unique or on his own.
Right.
And that means that he's actually stuck because he hasn't grown beyond his master. He is only what his master gave him.
He's always like, well, what would Mr. Miyagi do? And there's a point, I think several times where his wife, Amanda, tells him, you don't need to be Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
Be Daniel, you know,
Daniel's good enough.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he's still forging that identity a little bit. And having Johnny come in, you know, that's something that's very much Daniel's and only Daniel's, you know what I mean? Is this relationship with Johnny, you know,
it is his own. And like that,
belong to Mr.
that Miyagi. And his love of hockey, which I was so happy to like hear he had another hobby than work, being a dad.
Yeah.
Because
he doesn't have any friends.
He has no friends. He has people that report to him. He has employees. He has his wife. He has all of these obligations, but in the Karate Kid movies, mm-hmm. he has no friends either.
No. Yeah.
He only has girlfriends. He has these strong relationships with women, his mom, his girlfriend, his girlfriend in each of the movies.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Right. He has these strong relationships with women, but he never actually develops relationships with men because he's never, except for Mr. Miyagi, who is his father-like figure.
Exactly. Yeah.
He just hasn't grown.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're so correct.
Whereas Johnny himself has relationships with men. He has bad relationships with women. It's like they're the opposite.
Yeah, that's true.
Like they're the opposite.
It's almost like they could learn something from each other a little bit. Yeah. No, you're so right. Because Johnny, he is stuck. That's true. Because his friends are his old high school friends.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. He hasn't really built up any new relationships. But he still has that support system. It's still there. And that's important. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's almost like, Johnny and Daniel could learn a little bit from each other, but
what's interesting is that the story itself is crafted in such a way that it actually pulls them together. Right. Like, so it's like this push and pull, just like a yin yang symbol where it pushes them apart. They're like, I don't understand you. I don't understand you. And then for some reason they converge in the plot, like something brings them together. The first time the plot itself brings them together, like he notices the sign, or he notices, like they do things to each other, and then suddenly they're like brought together very suddenly. But when they actually spend time in each other's company, they realize they are both equals and opposites, and it's glorious. So the first time that happens is his car is torched by Daniel LaRusso's cousin. And so Johnny's like, I need a new car. They go on a test drive because that's hilarious.
Yes.
They're stuck in a car together. And then they go and have a beer and they talk.
Yes. It's so
good. And they realize that they are like the same. Mm-hmm. Like they're soulmates.
Yes.
You know, like it's bananas.
A dyad. Ah.
Like they're bros.
They're bros. Have you read the Joseph Campbell quote about a dyad?
Yes, I have. Just to prove JJ Terrio wrong. Chris Terrio doesn't understand.
No, they don't understand Campbell. What a dyad is.
But a dyad is actually referring to a marriage.
Exactly. A marriage, a relationship.
Where
Campbell says a relationship is the sacrificial field. Where you come together and become two together, you know, where that's what Daniel and Johnny are. When they come together and become two together, it unites the All Valley. It unites everybody. And that's what I find so fascinating, is that this isn't something that Kreese and Mr. Miyagi could have done. If Kreese and Mr. Miyagi had been bros, I don't necessarily think, you know, you know, like, I mean, maybe it would, maybe Johnny and Daniel would have been best friends if Kreese and Miyagi had been bros, but I can't see them being bros because they're too, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they could have, I don't know. That's a fanfic for another time, but even like, you know what I mean? Even like, the new generation, you know, Johnny and Daniel's kids, the new kids at school, the new generation, you know, when they come together, it doesn't bring their parents together, you know?
Yeah.
It's Johnny and Daniel who, when they come together, suddenly everything clicks into place. And that's what makes them the dyad. And I find that so fascinating. And Mary Claire, I sent you this visual aid.
Yes. We'll talk about it. Like what is a dyad? And what is something that Star Wars has really understood, but everybody misunderstands about Star Wars?
Avergence in the Force.
Anakin,
right? Avergence in the Force. So avergence is defined as the common element between convergence, to come together, and divergence, to move apart. When two lines, two perpendicular lines meet for a split second, that is the vergence, you know, that middle point. When they are coming together, that's the convergence. And then when those lines split apart, that's a divergence. And the vergence in the middle, that middle point, Johnny and Daniel, they decide which way this goes. When Daniel and Johnny fight, everybody's fighting. When Johnny and Daniel get along, when they converge, everybody gets along. They're that middle point that decides which way this energy flows. And it's so good.
And again, like this is also a vergence is like when a wave is about to turn, right? You know, like it's this key, it's this like moment, it's this fractional moment, or it's this point of turn. And it's something super interesting in physics itself, but in the story, you can actually start to see when these moments happen and when things are like, I don't know, satisfying and calm and, you know, of these really interesting things.
Oh, like when Daniel and Johnny shake hands, I think it's near the end of season two. They both just so happen to be out on a date with their lady. It turns into a double date because of course it has to. That's just writing 101. It turns into a double
date.
It's a meet cute. And then again, every time they have to like spend real time together as adults, they're like, oh no, we're best friends. Like,
yeah.
Oh no.
I didn't realize that we were actually best friends this whole time.
And yeah. Right.
Back to hating each other for a variety of reasons.
The writers are so smart because they know that when Johnny and Daniel are getting along, they fixed the show. The show is just over now. So then something will always happen to drive them apart again, you know, and it's always something so dramatic, like Johnny's son is dating Daniel's son and they got drunk. So they go and they hide at Johnny's house and Daniel doesn't know where his daughter is. And how dare you, Johnny? How dare you hide your daughter, my daughter, here at your house?
Yeah. They use like full like drama tropes. Like,
oh, it's so good.
So many like exceptionally angsty things that they pull out and they're not afraid of, like, you know, hey, this is love or this is lust or this is, you know, I'm into this person. They're not afraid of any of those topics, which is also really satisfying.
Good. Yeah. Because, you know, just embrace it, you know, embrace these drama tropes and embrace, you know, I don't know what I'm saying.
Everyone is super horny in the show.
Yes.
And I think it's because the writers fundamentally understand that there is a dyad in sex and violence.
Yes.
The things that make you feel alive, right? Mm-hmm. So karate is inherently violent, even in the Miyagi way of doing it. People can still get hurt. Like sex is reaffirming. Both of these things are like life affirming. You live if you are on the verge of destruction or if you are on the verge of creation, both of these things, and they are opposites of each other. And so flow with the binary dyad,
exactly,
slash Tao or yin yang of the show.
Yes, they're opposites, but they are so linked because both put you in a person's intimate space.
Yes.
When you're so close to someone like that fighting, you know, you are on the opposite.
Sometimes you're literally on top of them.
Exactly.
Like a sexual position.
Like making love. Exactly.
You're holding them like, and there isn't much difference except for the fact of the intention behind what you're doing.
Right. And so it's like, so when they acknowledge that these are physical people, Johnny and Daniel are both very physical creatures, you know what I mean? So of course they're also super horny.
And also like the kids themselves, like that at one point, Sam and Robbie are dating and they're making out but also like sparring, and so are
every time Sam and Miguel get together, it's because they're like play fighting, you know, they're flirting slash fighting, you know what I mean? And then it always ends with Sam like pinning him and then kissing him, or Miguel does the same thing to her, you know, like every single time.
Tori and Miguel. Yeah. Like there's this one moment in, I think it's season two, where they're like, they're both kind of like date fighting, like the two couples at that time. And that's like the four people that are like in this weird four-ship that's happening. Yes. I just like Tori and Robbie are probably going to get together in season four.
Definitely. Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect.
It's going to be so chaotic. Well, they're both so angry and chaotic that like together, they're just going to burn everything to the ground. And I'm excited, actually. sorry. I love drama. I love it.
Yes. And what we're sort of getting is like I have a lot of theories for season four, but I think that what they've done thus far is just super exceptional at understanding how opposites balance each other. And that's also one of the major themes that this show drives into really, really well.
Balance. Yes. Balance. Can we have true balance? Can we have lasting peace in the All Valley? The answer is yes. When Daniel and Johnny get along, yes, we'll have balance.
Yeah.
Finally. It's going to be great.
And this is just one of the major lessons. Like what the creators do is they really rewatched the movies, understood the lessons that was taught through the show with Miyagi. Mm-hmm. And they call it the Miyagi-verse. And balance is one of the major themes that Miyagi was trying to teach Daniel all of this time, is that, you know, sometimes you have to fight, but if you can avoid a fight, don't fight.
Right.
You have to have balance in your life. You have to have balance in your relationships. You have to have, like, balance is more than just in how you walk down the road.
Right. Well, it was like, that was something I really liked about the third Karate Kid movie when I finally watched it. The third Karate Kid movie is all about, you know, Daniel wants to enter the tournament again, but he doesn't really have a need to. He just wants to defend his title. And Mr. Miyagi's like, no, you know, you entered the tournament in the first one to, you know, to kind of to stand up to the bullies, and, you know, to, there was a reason for it. You know, it was the chosen like battleground when, you know, when Cobra Kai's were chasing Daniel through the streets, like literally to, you know, beat the crap out of him. It was like, no, we'll settle this at the All Valley, you know? But then in the third one, there's no reason to enter the tournament except for like pride, you know, just to defend his title. And Mr. Miyagi's like, no, don't do that, actually. And I thought it was so smart. It was really good. You know, like when you don't have to fight, don't fight. Just don't do it.
Yeah. It certainly does something that fighting for fighting's sake.
Right.
Is just destruction. Right.
Right.
And it's something I wish Star Wars would like re-understand, is that there's a reason why people need to fight. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, there is no reason they need to fight. They're just crease, right? They're just, I'm fighting for the sake of power or, you know, control or, you know, to hurt others.
Right. Right.
Right. Whereas if you're fighting with a reason to fight, defending others, protecting yourself, then it's bigger than just you.
Right.
And you're using your powers for something that's not just about you. And it's that selfishness, selflessness thing that George Lucas is so good at talking about, but nobody ever listens to.
Nobody ever listens.
Right? Because it's like, if you're fighting with the reason of, I have compassion and love for others and I want to protect those others, then you have the right steps towards right. the right direction. If you're like, I want to fight because I want to control, or I want to hurt others, or I want what right. I want, that's the selfishness right. direction.
Well, that was Mr. Miyagi. He said that karate is here in your head and here in your heart, but never here in your belly.
Yeah.
You know, it's never that anger. You know, karate shouldn't come from there. When it comes from there, the dark side, that is.
Yeah, exactly. <You know? laughs> Yeah, because like if you're just trying to hurt others, and many times in the season or in the show, the kids will get caught up in revenge.
Yes. Like, oh my God. Right? Mary Claire.
Especially Hawk. That.
Yeah.
Hawk gets caught up in revenge. Like, you dissed us. You said a snake slithering in the grass, which
yeah.
And so right. he goes and destroys Miyagi's old house.
Right. Like every
which broke me a little bit.
I'm did, like, yeah.
Damn you, Hawk.
Yeah. Every perceived slight, Hawk is like, no, you can't say that about my friends. You can't do that. Like, yeah. Oh, I have so much. Because I want to talk about Hawk, but first I want to talk about at the beginning of season two. I want to say it's like the first episode of season two. Daniel tells his daughter Sam, like, "Hey, the reason I'm reopening Miyagi-Do is to take down Cobra Kai."
Yeah, yeah.
He literally says that. He's like, "Yeah."
He only acts out of anger in the first yeah. season. Well, he's like, you yeah. exist here. I must stop you. And like his wife, mm-hmm. Amanda's like, what are you, a child? Like,
yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, then that's the thing. So in season one, Cobra Kai wins the All Valley tournament, but it's not, you know, you would think that that's the victory Johnny needed and everything's fixed now. Yeah. Cobra Kai won the All Valley, but no, that's not the end of the story. That's not the true victory. And so Cobra Kai is back on top. And Daniel's like, okay, I'm going to, as a response to this, I'm reopening Miyagi-Do. I'm going to have all my own students. It's going to be great. His daughter, Sam, goes to school with all of these Cobra Kai kids. And she's kind of seeing, you know, what's happening to her friends. You know, people are becoming more aggressive, all this stuff. And she doesn't like it. And then when her dad says, well, come join Miyagi-Do. We're going to fight back. We're going to take down Cobra Kai. She says, I don't want to fight them. Yeah. They're not my enemies. They're my friends. And then that's where we start in season two with her. But then by season three, she's like, no, those Cobra Kai kids are the worst. Let's go beat them up. Like she's like, oh, they're in the laser tag. Let's jump them in the laser tag and beat yeah. them up. Like, oh my gosh. Like that's because
the yeah. point is like light and dark and all of these things mm-hmm. exist in all people, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes it just takes the right circumstances or the lack of circumstances that brings it out. Sam right. has been cushioned all her life. Of yeah. course she can be like, I'm going to be benevolent, you know, like she hasn't built that coping mechanism to understand her own anger with her friends right. or people she cares about being put in danger. And she struggles psychologically the third season, the whole right. time with
oh, it's so good.
Fear of Tori yeah. and this fear of like what it is. And then the balance truthfully is understanding your own selfishness mm-hmm. and your own selflessness and understanding where that balance needs to exist between the two. It is not just being fully selfish, or it's not being fully selfless. You can't exist that way, right? Right. If you're fully selfish, you're never going to, leave the couch and stop eating Cheetos, right?
Yeah.
Like, right. Yeah. Like you're never yeah. going to, you're Johnny in the first season mm-hmm. when he's just drinking beer, getting yep. through the day and watching Iron Eagle on TV, yep, right?
Yeah.
If you're fully selfless, okay, you do charity work and you're giving away all your money and you're never eating because you're scared somebody else won't eat that meal for right. you or run it, right. you know, you're taking a meal away from a kid. It's about finding a middle path between the two that is your balance, your vergence, mm-hmm. your fulcrum, where you exist in balance between those two things. And everybody has to have those own internal waves of journey between up and down so that the characters themselves can grow and see their darkness and their light. And maybe that is Sam's dark path, but they say this whole thing is going to be 6 seasons. So we might get a darker version of Sam at some point.
Right. Right. Yeah. You're so smart. I love listening to your talk. You're so smart. Oh, no, you're so right. I'm thinking about how, you know, that balance and how these two dojos in the valley really begin to foster this like us versus them mentality, you know, where mm-hmm. it's like you were saying with Hawk, where every perceived slight against Hawk's in group, you know, it is an affront to himself, and that cannot stand because my group is the best actually. And we have to go strike them back. You know?
Yeah. And Aisha also plays into that too. Mm-hmm. Right.
They all do. Oh, they all do.
Yeah.
The Miyagi-Do kids do it too, where, you know, they come to internalize this like us rivalry. Versus them. Yeah. This rivalry, they inherit their father's generational trauma of like, we're enemies, you know, we'll always fight. Yeah. And
you're always going to be the same, you know, and don't trust those Cobra Kai kids.
Exactly. Oh man. Yeah. And Daniel has like, I don't remember what they were fighting about, but he like goes up to Johnny and he's all like, you know, sometimes I try to get along with you, but you make it so easy to remember who's the bad guy in all of this. And like, Daniel, stop it. But then like, where that us versus them thing gets really interesting to me is with characters like Kreese and Hawk. Kreese.
They've given us so much backstory.
Oh, he's given us so much backstory, which like breaks my heart. I'm so upset that they made me love Kreese.
Because they showed, okay. Uh-huh, and this is something I've talked about a fair amount in Star Wars. And shout out to Blind Man Baldwin, who really like helped me see the light in this. Cause I never thought of Sheev Palpatine as somebody you could empathize with.
Right. Okay.
They showed Kreese, who is the dark side. He is the evil master.
He's the dark side to Mr. Miyagi's light side.
Exactly. Like he is like to like Obi-Wan or Yoda. Yeah. Miyagi's more of a Yoda, you know? He is like the Palpatine to the Yoda. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, everybody in this universe or the galaxy far, far away mm-hmm. once was a baby.
Yes, exactly.
And they showed us Kreese as a young kid who had hope, who had mm-hmm. nothing but the world ahead of him, all of this opportunity. He had a girl, you know.
Yeah.
He had nothing but potential.
Mm-hmm.
And life threw at him all of these other things and these decisions that he had to make. And he had to kind of lean into this dark power that he had in him to survive.
Right.
How can you not empathize with this man now?
Exactly. Yeah. How can you? Well, he seems to, it's pretty, they don't say it, but it's pretty obvious that he has some severe PTSD.
Yes.
You know, and how can you, he always talks about a war is coming, Johnny. And I think the first time I watched Cobra Kai through, I was like, shut up, old man, shut up. Like, but by the time you get to season 3 and, you know, on several rewatches, I'm like, oh no, he means it. He thinks that the streets are going to run red with blood. Like he literally thinks literal war is coming. I mean, he says that a couple times. He says there's no such thing as peace, only the lull between wars. Like, yeah, he thinks something really bad is going to happen. And I need to train you to be strong enough to survive because, you know.
And that's all based on his own experience, which
exactly.
is that's
exactly.
what happened to him, right?
How can you not want someone like that? Someone who so firmly believes that something bad is going to happen and has that PTSD. You want them to find peace and, you know, be able to sit down and relax and look at, you know, I just want to be like, hey, look at Miguel, look at Robbie. those are your grandsons. They are, you know, through Johnny. Yeah, those are like his grandkids through Johnny. And I'm like, they're going to be okay. They're going to be all right. Johnny's going to be all right. You can, it's okay. You know what I mean? Like when you show a character's humanity like that, how can you not just want them to be okay? That's all I want. I want everybody to be okay.
I mean, that's what you want for people. It's like, you don't want them to like suffer. I mean, I would say anyone who has empathy doesn't want even bad people to suffer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. And the show itself tells us through Kreese's flashbacks that although he is the bad guy, quote unquote, in our mm-hmm. minds, he's the mm-hmm. bad guy to Daniel, especially Daniel blames Kreese for everything, which means that's the wound that needs to be fixed.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Mm, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Because Daniel says, oh, it's not Johnny. It was the teacher.
Right.
Right. Well, the teacher had a teacher.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. And that's the generational trauma that we're dealing with. And I think that this is a much larger topic that I want to explore as the rest of Cobra Kai comes out, because how it comes out, we're getting more of that with Terry Silver coming up. You cannot fix generational trauma mm-hmm. with more trauma.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah. Oh, you're so smart. Well, I'm thinking about, so, you know, that this us versus them, I have a lot of big swirling thoughts right now. So Kreese has internalized that everything is always going to be us versus them. And then we see through his backstory that a lot of things have been taken from him. He has lost a lot of people that he cared about, his mother and his girlfriend, and a lot has been taken from him. And then we have a character like Tori, who also has her own tragic backstory. And she has a line where she says, you know, some people have it good in life. Some people are handed everything, but people like us have to fight for every inch of what's ours.
Yeah.
And so this us versus them mentality, your group, your us is ours, you know, that's yours. And you have to fight for it. And so Kreese, you know, he and Tori are so similar. I really love that he basically
adopted her.
He basically adopted her. That does a lot for me.
I know. Well, and he's like, I see your problems and you need like her mom is very sick. She's taking care of her mom and her younger brother.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, again, a fatherless child.
Oh, it's a common
theme in this show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tori's like dealing with this like building manager who's kind of like sexually harassing her.
Yes, constantly.
Yeah,
it's no bueno.
It's not good. And Kreese is like, yeah, no, I don't play that way. I might be evil, but like I'm gonna use my powers in a selfless way.
Exactly. To protect Tori.
So interesting. Exactly. Because it's not like how you learn, it's what you learn.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, so like with Kreese, where he's like, so Tori is mine now. I don't mean that in like a possessive way, though he is kind of possessive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I've adopted you. You're in my family. You're in my in-group. And when you're Kreese's, he fights for you and he protects you and he looks out for you in his own way.
In his own way.
In his own way. I mean, sometimes it's very literal. Like when he goes and he beats up Tori's building manager so that he'll leave her alone. You know what I mean? But then, you know, he's like, oh, I'm going to have to teach you the hard way, Johnny. Because he says several times, like, Johnny, you're still my student. You know, up until I think the finale of season 3, Kreese still thinks of Johnny as his, where it's like, I've adopted you. You're mine. I'm going to look out for you. I'm going to give you the tools you need to survive when the streets run red with blood.
Yeah. he's doing it. And this is where it beats you up a little bit. You're like, this guy literally thinks, and that's what makes complicated villains, right? This guy literally thinks World War III is coming.
Yeah, exactly.
And these kids need to be prepared my son, quote unquote, Johnny, needs to be prepared. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, and I, it would be really interesting to see if he doesn't give up on Johnny in his own twisted way either later.
I wonder if he already has. Sorry, I'm building. Yeah. I wonder if he already has, because the problem with Kreese is that his love is conditional.
Oh yes.
He will kick you out of the in group in a heartbeat.
Oh
you
yeah.
know what I mean, his definition in us versus them, his definition of us is constantly changing.
He and kicks it's like kids. Do you have power?
Right.
You
right.
Give me power to protect me.
Exactly.
That's always like the pyramid, mm-hmm, right? Because it's based in that selfishness.
Yeah.
Idea.
Yeah. He kicks kids out of the dojo ruthlessly if they're not strong enough. It's like, nope, you don't cut the mustard to be in this in group. Get out. You know, it's that conditional love. So, but then I think, I don't know, we'll see how it goes in season four, but in the finale of season three, Kreese has Johnny in like a chokehold. And he's like, I didn't want it to go this way, Johnny. And I'm like, oh, was he about to actually kill Johnny? I think he might have actually kicked Johnny out of the in-group and has replaced him with Robbie. You know what I mean?
Right. His son. Yeah. And so that's kind of like, that's a very Palpatine-ish move too, right?
Yes.
I'm going to replace Vader with your...
With his younger...
Hot, fresh son.
Yeah. Younger and more powerful. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
but it's fear.
Why is Robbie more powerful?
Why is Robbie
more powerful?
Because he studied under Daniel.
Yes, because he knows Daniel. Both paths.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's the thing. Why is Kreese's love conditional? It's because his love is clouded by fear.
Yep.
It's fear. That's what it comes down to. And if he could just shed that fear and have that unconditional love, I want Kreese Denshin. I want Kreese to give us Sheev Denshin, basically. Sheev Denshin via Kreese. That's what I need.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, that is the only way, like, cause you can't just heal the trauma of the current generation.
Yes.
And move forward. You have to find a way to heal the trauma of the past so that the generational trauma can never come back.
Right.
You actually have to heal everybody. It's like you have no choice. You have to heal Kreese, or it's the snake that never
dies. Exactly. Oh, you're so smart. Yes. Yes. I feel you. I hear you. I hear you, what you're saying. But then here's why Hawk is my favorite character.
Okay, let's hear about Hawk. Yeah.
Here's why Hawk. Well, it ties into this because Hawk also has that really strong sense of us versus them, which I think he still needs to work through. But I like it because his sense of us versus them comes from like friendship. Because when Kreese is like, these Cobra Kais are no longer strong enough to be in Cobra Kai, I'm going to kick them out, Hawk stands up for them. And he says, like, they've been loyal to this dojo. Don't kick them out. You know what I mean? And Kreese is like, I don't care. They're not strong enough. They're gone. And so Hawk stays with Cobra Kai. You know, he's afraid of getting kicked out of the dojo too. And Kreese fills the dojo with these stronger students who just so happen to be kids that used to beat up Hawk at school.
Yeah.
But now they're Hawk's quote unquote allies. They're his quote unquote friends. And when they beat up other kids together, they're like, yeah, Hawk. Yeah. Like giving them high fives, pats on the back. Like they're his, he could be in that strong in-group, but Hawk decides, no, you're not my friends. These aren't the people I want to be friends with. He's still stuck in the us versus them. Like, you know what I mean? I think the All Valley is still stuck in us versus them, but Hawk's idea of who is in my group, who are my friends? It has real heart to it. He goes back to his actual friends, even
such
though
a good moment.
Even though they're weaker, quote unquote, right? Well, and then he apologizes because his defining moment is when the new Cobra Kais that used to beat up Hawk, they're holding Dimitri, one of Hawk's old friends, and they're like, hey, free hit. And so, you know, Hawk could go and punch Dimitri in the face.
Nobody chooses to protect him and save him.
Yeah, he saves Dimitri. And then he apologizes because Hawk actually broke Dimitri's arm earlier in the season. During one of these big freaking brawls that these kids seem to keep getting into, you know, Hawk broke Dimitri's arm. And at the very end of the season, Hawk apologizes. She just says, hey, listen, I'm sorry for all of it. And I loved that. It was so good to have that ownership. And for me, this is kind of what I want out of forgiveness narratives, because so many people are like, well, X and so person doesn't deserve forgiveness. And I'm like, yeah, in the real world, if somebody broke my arm and they were like, hey, sorry, want to hang out? I'd probably maybe still be like, no, I need to have this boundary. I need to, you know, I hear your apology. I accept your apology, but I just don't want to be friends anymore. I don't want to hang out. You broke my arm and I'm working on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the real world, we take our time, we establish boundaries, and that's good and that's healthy. But in fiction, which can transcend reality and, you know, be better than reality, that apology is enough. Their friendship is enough. And Dimitri forgives him and they become friends again. And Mary Claire, I love it. I'm crying.
It's so good. Like, it is honestly transcendent and speaks to the power of apology. And I really want to come back to the point you talked about, us versus them. And us versus them is dark side.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because the light side is compassion, and that we are all interconnected. There is no difference in the force.
Yes.
Right. So us versus them, we are separate, is the dark side. We are lonely. We are, you know, stuck. We can't relate with others. Relationships and coming together and understanding that there is no difference between you, me, the rock, the tree, the droid, the ship, that is the light side of the force, and leans into compassion, because compassion and love for others comes from understanding our shared experiences and our shared understanding of each other's pain.
Right, right. Exactly.
Whereas the us versus them is protecting yourself from others' pain.
Right, right, right. Because with the us versus them, if everybody is in your in-group, if there is
the
no
whole
us,
world,
yeah, the whole yeah, world it's all is just in your us. In-group, yeah, then, yeah. I mean, that's a lot. It opens you up to great pain, but it also opens you up to something bigger and grander than yourself. It's like the end of The Lion King 2 when Simba is like, no, those bad lions are bad and they'll never be part of us. And his daughter says, them, us, look at them. They are us.
They are
what
us.
Differences do you see? She says, look at them. What differences do you see? And then, you know, because The Lion King is all about the circle of life. It's like, oh, crap, you're right. We're all part of the great circle of life. We're all part of one force.
We're all part of the ultimate balance.
Yes.
Of the universe.
Of the universe.
And the valley.
And the All Valley. Yes. We have to heal the All Valley.
Well, I think that is like awesome. That gives us a really good understanding of what Cobra Kai is all about. There's so much more actually to dig into, but I think that this was enough to talk about. Do we want to talk briefly about like where the show is going? What are the things we might see?
Let's do that.
I don't want to speculate too much, because I know that that's always like really hard, but I do think that there's a few major things that have been called out in the first three seasons. And again, the creators have said that there's going to be six seasons. And I think that that's really important to talk about briefly about the structure of the show and why certain things might happen. And it all comes down to the fact that Daniel and Johnny are spiritually married, according to Katie.
Yeah, they gotta get married. Yes, they gotta get married. Yes. I don't mean literally.
No.
Spiritually, they got to get married. Yes.
They have to be friends.
They
truthfully have to be
brothers.
Look, you're my brother.
Yes. Yes.
Right. We are the same. That realization has to happen at some point.
Yes.
They're probably going to go through several periods of massive amounts of angst. Like, they're going to come together. This is them coming together. This is, if this were a Star Wars, This is literally Kylo and Rey in the throne room killing Snoke and finally deciding to work together.
Yes, because right?
That's what we're getting.
Let's mention that season three ends with Johnny and Daniel deciding, hey, let's join our houses. they merge their dojos because, well, mostly to stand against Kreese, I think. It's not an honest union. It's, you know, it's not a wedding. You know what I mean? This is alliance of convenience.
Alliance of convenience. Yes. Right. Yes. It's fake dating.
It's fake dating.
If we're going to use tropes, this is fake dating.
It is kind of fake dating. Yeah.
Right. Cause they're going to be pretending to be together on the outside and maybe they're invested in it.
Yeah. They're showing this united front.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, we said the same thing. Yeah. They're showing this.
I love you, Katie.
I love you too. Very clear. I'm hugging you right now. We're just like, oh, we get each other. Yes. So yeah, at the end of season three, they've come together to show this united front, but they aren't truly married yet. And the showrunners have said that they want to go for 6 seasons. And personally, when I look at that, like, you know, using my writer brain, I'm like, oh, okay. So Johnny and Daniel coming together at the end of season three, that's the midpoint of a 3-act structure.
Yes.
And the midpoint is either a false defeat or a false victory. So that, you know, that means that them coming together now is the false victory. And over like the next 3 seasons, seasons 4, 5, and 6, we'll see those growing pains. We'll see the testing of this relationship. They will, I'm sorry to say, inevitably break up.
They will break up.
That's how the 3-act structure works.
And that's how fake dating works.
They'll break up
because of some sort of misunderstanding, usually. Some sort of misunderstanding between the two of them. But then they realize that they need each other. And it was beyond just this.
The convenience.
It was something else fundamental about themselves.
Yes.
And then they'll become pros for life.
And then Barney Stinson
always wanted.
And then yes, bros for life. They'll actually, you know, season 6, they'll actually get together. It'll be an actual union, an actual marriage. It'll be like a big wedding. It'll have that feeling where it's like, we're looking forward to the future. There's going to be children. Johnny and Daniel are going to have children, you know, like,
or theoretically Sam and Robbie could have
Sam and Robbie. Ah. Oh.
Then they'll be grandfathers together.
I would love that if Johnny and Daniel shared a grandchild.
That would be the ultimate transcendent version of their enemies to family relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Exactly. That their literal progeny have a kid together.
Yep. Though, like, I'm gonna shipping discourse. I ship Sam and Miguel. But Miguel is like Johnny's adoptive kid. Like, because Johnny's dating Miguel's mom. If they get married, then Miguel will be Johnny's son. And then Johnny and Daniel.
I'm really good with however they go. Because I ship everybody with each other.
That's true. Oh, I'm not saying I dislike Sam with Robbie. Like, there's beautiful people making out is always a joy to me. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I'm a multi-shipper. Sam and Miguel is good too.
Yeah.
I don't like Miguel and Tori together.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it, but I was like, this is an end game. Like, again,
this is not,
I,
this
I'm
was
such, I'm such a multi-shipper that I'm never against any ship.
Like, no, like, I mean, real. They showed us so much love with dating and potential and no one's like on the internet being like, you guys suck. Like, cause they were like, it's just part of the show. Shut up.
I can't imagine, maybe I'm wrong. I can't imagine Cobra Kai drawing the youth and having to have shipping discourse on Tumblr. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a huge Cobra Kai shipping discourse.
Have you looked up the AO3 tags? Like,
I haven't. I should.
We need to do that.
Next podcast.
We'll prep for season 4. Season 4, we'll have shipping discourse and be like, we combed Tumblr and oh my God. I don't know. It's not on Twitter at least. So, you know, that's nice.
Next podcast. It'll be great.
So yes, I just want to say, like, there's going to be a lot from a structure perspective that they're going to lean into. we also expect them to pull more from the Miyagi-verse.
Yep.
Right? Which
Hillary Swank.
Terry Silver.
Yeah.
Hillary Swank, right? We know Terry Silver is coming back because he's been in the promos for season four.
Right,
But we want Julie San. We want Hillary Swank to come back and play a fundamental role because she is Daniel's adopted sister through the Miyagi.
Through Miyagi,
yes. Right? Like, and he might not know about her. Miyagi went and lived and took care of Julie. Mm-hmm. Like, he lived in her house.
Yeah, he lived in her house.
And he was literally like a dad to her for a while.
Yep.
Right? And so she's fundamental to him and to this universe. And my hope is through this feminine that will be brought into the show, that Tori and Sam will get the influence that they both need from the show. And I hope they bring back the actress who played Aisha, because it was a mistake to cut her.
It was such a mistake. I'm very salty about it, because as soon as they wrote in Tori, I was like, oh no, because
you're trying to do this thing where they're like opposites and they're like the femme version of Daniel and Johnny. And I love what you're doing, but don't.
Yeah, like, exactly. Don't
like it didn't need to happen. Aisha was a better choice because Sam and Aisha were friends. Best friends before and constantly friends and then in conflict. And that was a better choice. And just because you didn't, I don't know, like her body type, I assume.
I'm very salty about that. Pissed. I think it was a body type thing. I think it was also, they were like, how do we write three girls? We know how to write three girls. There's three girls.
What?
So, you know what I mean? They were like, so there's good girl and bad girl. How do we write third girl? What is third girl? We don't need third girl. Get rid of
third girl. Third needs girl. To come back. Aisha needs, writes for Aisha.
Right. Yes. Justice Seriously. For Aisha.
All the way.
Very salty about that one. Yeah.
I understand. Yep. Okay. Sending her away to a different school. We'll bring her back.
Yeah. Bring her back.
Absolutely. Bring her back. She's great. She was wonderful. Great. She added so much spice to the show in a different way. Yep. And her story was actually really important to a lot of people.
Yep. Yep.
And you cut a black woman from the show. Sorry. Okay.
Don't apologize. Absolutely not. Like it's a raw deal. They shouldn't have cut her. Nah. You won't hear any argument from me on that one.
But okay, so back to Julie San.
Yes.
Well, Julie San would give them a lot of really interesting things to do with the women characters. They need some women writers in the writer's room to do it well and to do it justice. But yes, please.
Well, it'll do a couple different things, because one, it'll give us another voice about Mr. Miyagi, because pretty much everything we hear about Mr. Miyagi comes from Daniel.
Yeah.
And Julie will be all like, well, that's not the man I knew. You know, they'll have some.
The man I knew knew how to dance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They, you know, not like, you know, some of their memories will align, but they knew different sides of him. And I think that's important to see another side of Mr. Miyagi. You know, this no one way. You know, this idea that there's no one story. There's no one story about Mr. Miyagi. Julie's perspective is important and we need it.
And that's going to tell us something so fundamental. And I wanted to get into it, but I'm going to save it for a later time. But that the truth very much depends on your own point of view. And sometimes your version of the truth is not just the only version of the truth.
Right.
And this ties back to, you know, Johnny being the hero of the story in Cobra Kai, but he wasn't in The Karate Kid. Well, it's just because of the point of view of what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Miyagi was a fan of love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and he was a fan of friendships, and he wanted to make sure that people were taken care of and had an opportunity to grow. And I think I think we see that Daniel had some of his life still with Miyagi in his life. Like, he saw Sam as a baby and a little kid. I don't know that Miyagi would have been happy with where he was at the start of the show. So it would be interesting to see Daniel judged through Julie's lens.
Right, right, right.
Especially yeah. since all of the women in the show are just so smart and just like call it out.
Yes.
Except those that are stuck in the eternal battle, like Sam and Tori and Aisha.
Exactly.
But Moon and,
yes, Moon
you know,
and Carmen
yeah, and Amanda like, are all like, all right, always, children.
Yes. They're always like, yeah, Moon is so good because she's like at the end of season two, the end of summer, she throws a big end of summer party at her house and she invites everybody, like all the Cobra Kai's, all the Miyagi-Do's, because she's just all like, we're all just kids at the same school. Like, let's just put all of this behind us and have a party. And I'm like, thank you, Moon. Thank you for that. And then Carmen is always telling she's always telling Johnny, like, wow, that Daniel guy sounds like a huge jerk. You know, you got to be the bigger man though, right?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to end unless somebody's the bigger man. Like, she's always that voice. And I so appreciate that somebody in the show will say things like that, you know, it's really important.
It absolutely is. And then the last thing that I had on my list, and maybe you got another one, is the fact that Miguel's mom, Carmen, constantly Ooh. Brings up Miguel's dad as a really bad guy.
Right.
Right.
I'm intrigued, but I'm also nervous because, again, all roads lead back to Star Wars. Star Wars really hurt me. And so I have all of the walls up and I'm like, okay, Cobra Kai, I'm looking to see what you do with this, but I'm also really scared to find out what you're going to do with this. Cause yeah, Carmen won't stop invoking her ex-husband. She's like, oh, it wasn't until after I married him that I found out who he really was.
And what does that mean?
What does that mean? What? And then she'll say to Johnny, like, you got to stop fighting, Johnny. My ex-husband had many enemies. I'm just all like, girl, what? Who?
Yeah. And, you know, there's like this thing about, you know, this is unresolved past history.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like how in Star Wars, they always kill the moms. Normally yeah. in Cobra Kai, they kill the dads. And
yes.
yeah. This dad is still alive. So that means something.
Yeah. It's yeah. It's going to be, I don't know. What was the guy in Karate Kid 3, Mike something? He was the bad boy of karate.
Yeah. He'll probably come back. Yeah.
I'm like, I wonder if it's him or who knows. I really hope it's not Terry Silver. That would be weird. I don't want that at all.
I'm making a face.
That would be so weird. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. But is Kreese Johnny's dad?
Is Kreese Johnny's dad? Listen, I really hope not. Again, Star Wars has left me so jaded.
No, I don't
really
want it either,
that.
But also yeah. they kind of said maybe.
They kind of set it up a little bit. Like it could happen. It could absolutely happen. We would have to do a lot of steps to get there where it's like, you know, Kreese either slept with Johnny's mom, who I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. They only said it like one or two times. Either he slept with her. And then, you know, she had Johnny off on her own because she's like, I'm never calling that guy again. Or Johnny is actually Betsy's kid. Like Betsy.
And adopted by his
and then
mom.
Was, yeah. And then when Betsy yeah. died, he was adopted by his mom, whose name I can't remember. I'm
yeah.
sorry. And
I don't know. They put it out there as Betsy was potentially pregnant.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
With the letter. That
right.
wouldn't be given to him
right.
by his commander.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I
so
hope
there,
not,
there's a potential. Could.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have any other story things?
No, we got through so much and I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I really like this show.
I really like this show too. And it brings me a lot of joy to see how they construct things. The episodes are really short. I mean, they're just mm-hmm. 30 minutes. So mm-hmm. It's like turn one on and there's only 10 episodes a season. So you're just dealing with 5 hours of content.
Yeah.
Will be coming out. But
you know, I probably won't, you know, I know some people who are going to binge season 4 all in one day. I probably won't do that. I'll spread it out over a week or so, but
yeah
it'll, I will consume it very quickly though. Absolutely.
And if you've made it all throughout this entire spoiler conversation about themes and character and what is going on in Cobra Kai, and you're like, I have no desire to watch Cobra Kai. I really encourage you. Mm-hmm. If you've never watched it, please do watch it. This feels like it's like way too late in the conversation, but I'm going to say it anyway.
We should have said that at the top. We should have been like, wait, have you seen Cobra Kai? You person listening, have you seen it? Go watch it.
Yeah. I really didn't start out great. It was hard to get through the first episode.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we are where we are. Yep. We're both hyped for season 4. I know Katie and I are planning on coming back and talking about season 4 and digging into it. And I'm really, really looking forward to doing that.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely looking forward to it. I love talking with you. You're so smart.
Aw, you're so smart too.
Oh, thank you.
I always felt weird when you were like, you're so smart, Marie Claire. I'm like, I can't say that back like now because you're moving on to something else. And I'm like, oh, but you are so smart, Katie. You are the right person to have on the show to talk about Cobra Kai.
Thank you.
The show. Where can people find you if they're looking for your life online?
You guys can still find me on Twitter at PoeHotDameron. I don't tweet too much, but I'm there. So yeah, give me your Cobra Kai thoughts. I'd love to hear them. I'm still prone to like just absolutely going off sometimes about things that make me excited. So yeah, send me your Cobra Kai thoughts. I'd love to hear them.
Awesome. And this has been What the Fiction. We will, of course, be back for Cobra Kai season 4. Yeah, I really want to hear your thoughts on Cobra Kai. What do you see it's doing well? What do you hope the next seasons will bring, the second half of the full story? And yeah, we'll see you soon as season 4 comes around. Cheers.